All right. And you still live in Chicago, correct?
I do. I do. Born and raised in Lakeview.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where'd you go to school? All that kind of stuff.
I went to St. Alphonsus, right down the block from my house. Lincoln and Wellington there. Went to Resurrection High School. All girls Catholic. No big deal.
And are you Catholic?
I'm not Catholic.
I didn't think so. So that's interesting. But, you know, not really.
Religious.
A lot of people do that. You know, in Chicago, you go to your neighborhood school.
Right.
And even if you're not Catholic, and if there's a Catholic school nearby. Brian, how about you?
Well, I was born in Chicago, South Side. Still reside on the South Side.
Did you go to a Catholic school as well?
Heck no. I knew a
lot
of
friends. Are you a CPS boy all the way?
CPS.
Yeah.
Product of CPS. But I had a lot of friends that went to Catholic schools.
So 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
It was an experience, like, seeing them go. So it was all right.
Well, did you went to a neighborhood school, right? Like most people in Chicago.
Yeah. I went to John Fisk at one point. Then I went to Guggenheim when I moved into Englewood. And then left there, went to Hearst High School on the South Side. Then I moved out to Calumet City and went to Thornwood High.
Oh.
Played football 1 year and played basketball the other year. I had to play basketball because I broke my collarbone playing football. So that was the end of that.
And you look like you'd be a good athlete.
I'm okay. I'm not that good.
I didn't say you were really good. I just said you look like you'd be a good athlete. I mean, I'm a good athlete. Violetta, maybe not so much.
What aren't you good at, Judy? Is that any shorter list?
I would take. I need some time to think about that. Now it's on to Jeff.
What's the question?
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Palatine. Home of
finally,
the
we get a suburban
home of the Brown Chicken Murders.
Player here. Uh-huh. Home of the Brown Chicken
Palatine.
Murders. That's always
Green
nice.
Lanterns. Well, isn't that a bar?
What's that?
The Lanterns, Green Lanterns.
No.
Nellie's?
You go over this all the time. It's
Dirty Nellie's.
Dirty Nellie's is a bar out there. You're talking about Lamp Lighters.
Oh. There,
yes. I worked at both of those bars.
Cool. I've drank at both of those bars.
Me too. Copious amounts, I'm told.
I've been to both of those bars. That's all I'm saying.
You have been to the original Dirty Nellie's.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have.
I talked about this before, but yes, it was a house. It was
right.
Very,
it was your neighborhood kind of bar. Yeah. Now it's really a good bar.
Right,
I mean,
now it's
huge.
Fancy,
yeah.
Fancy,
I mean, what constitutes a good bar, though? I mean, you go to. Yes. I mean, that's just me. If I'm going to a bar, I'm going to a drink. I don't care about, you know, what it looks like on the inside. I mean, that's just me.
Comfortable stool.
You know what? It is atmosphere because, like, Dirty Nellie's is so big. And I would have said at first, well, a big bar to me says good bar because it's big and it's always crowded, generally. But no, not really, because sometimes those bars are icky.
Yeah, I wasn't really excited when the new Dirty Nellie's opened because it was this big conglomerate kind of corporate-looking behemoth of a facility.
Isn't there a concert, like a stage in the back?
Yeah, but they did a good job. I mean, they've got a stage room, which is really nice, and they've got the main bar, which is really nice.
So they have bands. They have
they do
comedians sometimes. Yeah.
Everything. I mean, you could rent it out. They do charity events. I'm doing a charity event there a couple weeks for a friend of mine's family. And it's really nice. And they have like an upper area that overlooks the band area that has its own bars. They have a patio area. I mean, it's definitely they try to cover all their bases there. So
Palatine
well, I
living.
Think what they did
P-town
was
living.
They saw that there was a need for that.
Mm-hmm.
You had your little bars, your little kind of neighborhood bars, but nothing like that.
Right, and they had that down before, but the place they were in was so run down, and then they used to do shows there. It would be packed. And it was dark and dank and scary at times.
Those are the kind of bars Brian, I think, likes.
I go to any bar that's serving good alcohol. That's
what's
good?
Good
yeah, what's good alcohol? Let's talk about good alcohol.
Well,
now.
If I order a drink, I don't want it watered down.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah, you're right.
You know, just give me a nice amount of alcohol, but don't charge me your arm and a leg for it.
And Brian, you work at bars, so does that happen a lot? Do they water down the drinks?
Well, not at this particular bar.
No, but just in general. That's a scam, right? Or a way to skim, I guess, at bars.
Well, Jeff would know a little bit more about that because he used to bartend. I don't think they water it down. I think too much ice.
Some places do. I mean, there are definitely nefarious bars and owners who will pour in liquid into bottles and make it look like it's full to pour out and then fool people. But
that better be against the law, and that should get a lot of jail time. Yeah. Your parents don't do that at their restaurant bar, do they?
No, I don't think so.
As a matter of fact, they enjoy
the opposite.
Right. Yeah, they do the opposite. They put more alcohol into
it. They put it on a burner and reduce it down to make it even more potent.
They sit on your lap and pour it down your throat. I mean, something like that. They do it right.
Literally. Yeah. Yes, they do it right.
They put the wine all the way to the rim. That's not a right pour, but whatever.
I think the best bar is defined by the bartenders. I mean, you look at a place like Cheers, if you want to look at it. And people came back to that place because it were the people who worked behind the bar. Bars I always went to that I always loved to go to were bars that I knew the people who worked there. I got to know them.
See, I'm the opposite. I hate when people know me. Like, I'm like, just do your job. Like, I don't want the chit-chat. Like, I came with my own friends. I don't need bartender
friends.
That's
interesting that you think that, Jeff, because it makes sense, except I would think it, like Brian said to begin with, it's more the ambiance and the people there, not... But I guess the bartender is a big part of it.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just not like social like that.
Unless you're going to get crunk, you know.
Right. And the worst bartender is the one who doesn't see you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you want to have a good bartender and one maybe you know. But I don't think bartenders are that yappy
anymore.
But it's
not necessarily yapping or talking to you. They remember you. They remember what you're drinking. They're polite. They're attentive. The best bartender I ever worked with in my entire life was Nancy, and she was deaf. She lost her hearing at the age of 18. But she could read lips like you wouldn't believe.
Wow.
And working with her was amazing because we could be across the bar. You know, we could be 20 feet down the length of a bar from each other in a room filled with people clamoring for drinks. And you could just mouth things at her and she would know what you want. And she could memorize anybody's drink. We could do a wedding for 300 people.
That's amazing.
And she would know everybody's drink because she would, you know, she wouldn't be distracted by noise.
Right.
She could see you and say, hey, oh, yeah, you wanted
to. Her other senses were
so much more heightened. And she was phenomenal. And then mostly because she could remember everything that you wanted. And she remembered people and she was very polite and
now that's
very
my
attentive.
Kind of bar. I'm in the back and I just mouth.
I just put your one finger up.
Bloody Mary. I just mouthed it and Jeff caught it because he's a good bartender.
Yeah,
because that's what I want them to do anyway.
Yeah, that's a bad feeling when you don't get noticed at the bar and you're standing there for about maybe 3 minutes is too long to be waiting
for. Sure.
Oh, yeah.
So if I wait that long, then I'll order a drink, but I won't tip. As we said earlier, I like the bars where the bartender – I personally know the bartenders and we can have a conversation because sometimes you can go in a bar and it's empty. You know, so if we're having a conversation, that's cool.
I'd like to take note, too, that the Rokan crew is talking about bars. Just big surprise there.
Well,
duh.
Of course.
Yeah, when they said just talk about anything, what was the first thing that came to our minds? Bars, drinks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on then. bars, drinks.
What was your first cocktail?
Now, there's a good question. What was my first cocktail? I'll bet it was a whiskey stone sour.
Oh, yeah.
At a wedding at Shibawa's.
Oh.
Where we had all our weddings.
Sure.
Yeah, that's interesting, too. I used to go to weddings with my parents. I would consider taking, maybe I would. My kids probably wouldn't go.
Weddings? I love weddings.
Yeah. Did you guys go to weddings when you were teens?
I hated weddings.
Families. I mean, I had a small family, so I didn't do a lot of them. But when I did, it was... I would go.
Let me mention again, Whiskey Stone Sour, Brian. That's why I went. Because I would be,
bars.
You know,
Amaretto Stone Sour.
And it was,
my dad was Amaretto Stone Sour. That's his go-to at a wedding.
Right. I cannot drink whiskey now. Whiskey is, ugh.
Really?
You had one bad night?
Maybe more than one. And I don't know what it is about whiskey, but although I will say I tried honey whiskey a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good.
It was delicious.
Yeah, you know why that's good? I'm going to ruin this for you. But
here he goes.
Yeah,
always the downer. Okay, Debbie Downer, tell us.
Like a pint of that. So not even a small bottle. A pint has like something like 25 grams of sugar in it, like tablespoons of sugar, rather.
How much teen does it have?
There's no teen. No teen.
Well, it was good. But now, other than that, I can't. And I know whiskey's really big right now.
Yeah.
Right?
It's America's booze.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I try. I went to a whiskey infused, like a melting pot kind of thing where it was the melting pot, I think, actually.
No.
And so
like fondue.
They paired up the whiskey with the fondue. You know, it was seven courses. So by the time it was all said and done, I must have had 14 little. And, it was a little bit of whiskey in a glass. But after about three or four, I was just touching it with my lip. Taste it. I couldn't. The smell, everything is just too strong.
Yeah.
So teach me how to be a better whiskey drinker, you guys.
I was like
wine.
I was like that with tequila. I just started back drinking tequila about a year ago. had a bad experience in Tijuana.
All right, well, this is the story we're going to need to hear.
And so it was in my first year in the Marine Corps, California. I was 20 years old, but you can cross the border. Drinking age is 18 over there. So
drinking age is as long as your head is above the bar.
Right. So you go there, and everything is, like, super cheap. So,
including the tequila?
Everything. And sometimes you get it for free because it's this guy. It'll be a couple of guys
walking
around.
Now, that's a good bartender.
Instead of, like, here where you get chips and salsa, there you get tequila.
Yeah, it's like you walk in there, and everybody's dancing is packed, and it's guys walking around with, like, super soakers with the backpack, but it's filled with, like, tequila and different types of liquor. So first experience, and I'm partying. I'm like, yeah, yeah. So guy comes and just starts pouring tequila down my mouth, and I'm just steady drinking and got, like, super sick. I was sick for, like, 2 days, and I was like, no more tequila for me. And I just started back drinking tequila.
Is that better, Jim?
About a year ago.
So is that your advice, is to get used to something? Always. Just have someone pour it down your throat?
No. If you want to get used to it, I mean, take it in small amounts.
Duties.
Don't overdo it like I did. That's a cautionary tale because, man, it was pretty bad.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing. Like anything, it took a while to like beer or hard liquor, but whiskey.
I don't like to discriminate. Just whatever.
Yeah. I guess it's, you know, you have to really make an effort.
Yeah.
Rum. I can't do rum.
Rum.
A lot of bad.
You got sick?
Many a time.
Yeah. Everyone got sick on rum.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do rum, the best rum, Meyer's Dark.
Meyer's Dark is good, yeah.
Ah, delicious.
Yeah.
Okay. Violetta, you can't, there's no alcohol that, you mean you're young, so you haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, I think that just that one that tastes really bad, what shot is that? Whenever
Malort?
Yeah, that's the one
Yeah, nobody drinks a lot of Malort. If they do, they don't talk about it.
Yeah, isn't that the one that smells like
it's terrible.
Yeah.
Why, and what is that, like a test? If you can drink that, you're a real drinker?
Right, it's like a seafaring thing. Because it comes from the Swedish.
I thought it was tequila, and someone gave it to me. It's just
surprise. Yeah, that's a terrible surprise. But yeah.
You guys ever had peppermint patties? You take the peppermint and then the chocolate syrup and shake it up.
Oh, that sounds awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like one of my first drinks.
My first official drink, honestly, was Mad Dog.
Oh, Mad Dog.
All right, if we're going to do first official drink, mine was Cold Duck, followed by Boone's Farm.
I don't know what any of that
Whatever
stuff
we
is.
Steal
Never
from
had
our
Boone's
parents.
Farm?
I don't know. What
Boone's,
Boone's,
Farm.
Boone's Farm was huge when we were growing
up. B&J, that was mine.
Boone's Farm is...
It's called fortified wine, but so it's just extra sugar added.
Yeah.
So it's got higher alcohol and it's flavor.
You guys are making me thirsty. Where's
well,
Kevin?
Yeah, where's
coffee?
Kevin? We
Kevin
did send
coffee.
Kevin Powell our coffee.
Better add
and
some Bailey's to that.
We should have added some in.
Yeah.
Jeez. Well, we do have the Knurble wagon back in the office, but
so interestingly, we're off from the Chicago area.
Mm-hmm.
What about you,
Judy?
You never told us.
Yeah, I was born in Chicago, born and raised in Chicago till I was a teenager.
And then
went to the Catholic school, St. Hedwig's.
Hedwig's.
Now closed. Well, I don't know. Growing up in the city, that's where you were from, where whatever school or parish was there.
You belonged to.
Yeah. So I grew up in a real Polish neighborhood.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Are you being snarky?
I am being snarky.
Suburban boy?
I am suburban boy, yep.
St. Teresa's. And then I moved to the suburbs, so.
Which suburb?
Des Plaines, actually.
Des Plaines?
Des Plaines. And I lived across the street from Maine North, where they filmed...
The Breakfast Club.
Look at that. You know that. Yeah. It's now closed. Every school I've gone to is closed.
That's weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
You close them down, huh?
I know, right? I go, and then they're like, all right, we're done. What else is there?
That is the height of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I was kind of curious. Like, by the time I get here, you're already working. You're, like, feet on the ground running. So, I mean, what time do you get describe to me what you do as far as like to prepare yourself for the actual day.
So I work 8 hours.
What?
Okay.
People
come in for the show, but it's funny because it does feel like a little bit like two jobs because I come to the newsroom at 11-ish and then I get, because there's always something to do. There's always, in the newsroom, there's always a story you can do. So like today I came in and I found two stories right quick. Kind of southern. Right quick, I found two stories, and I did them for Kim, who's anchoring at the moment.
What does that mean, you did them? So you
I recorded, yes. So I recorded what we call voicers. If I had more time, but I know we had to do this, I would have maybe called. So one was on Starved Rock, the scenic Illinois River, which you would go to Starved Rock to
Love
maybe
Starved
view.
Rock.
So beautiful, right?
I've never
people
been.
Who haven't worked on this area and haven't been there.
What?
Shocking. But the scenic
you
Illinois
bubble,
River
Violetta.
Has run over its banks
yeah.
and into the parking lot, which is not good for one of the busiest weekends coming
yeah.
up, Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
You know what? If you're going to go to Starved Rock,
don't
summer's great, but go in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's
pretty.
Really spectacular.
Can
really.
You camp there?
Sure.
I believe so. But
there's
you know what?
Campground.
I would suggest, yeah, camping's got to be great, but they have a great lodge.
Mm-hmm.
That is state run, I believe.
Yeah.
Still up and running, too. Yeah, I stayed there when I went, and it was really, really nice. I think under Governor Thompson, he redid all the state park lodges.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really fabulous.
And who got rich off of that?
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I did that story, and since I didn't have time to call, I just voiced it, meaning I just read it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a story on a guy who unfortunately murdered his ex-wife and got 90 years.
Absolutely.
And I did that because it was unique a little bit because it was 90 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But it was an especially brutal crime.
Now, you've done a lot of stories and you've been here for a long time.
I started here when I was 10. Go on.
I mean, is there like any, like two particular stories actually? Is it one story that you found it hard to get through? And what was the best story you ever...
Have we talked about this? Because I can't believe you asked me that.
No, I never
I think I
that.
Know one of them.
Right, so the hardest story, and it was just so strange. And you know what happens? You have kids, and things change. And so I was, you know, because as you guys know me, I'm pretty rough.
Tough.
I meant tough. Did I say rough? Because I...
Freud was right.
You can beat me up.
I'm pretty tough. There was this woman who, and I can't think of her name right now. She had lost her children to the state and then got them back. She obviously had mental health issues. I think when I tell you about this, you'll remember the case. And so she got her kids back, and then she hanged her little 4 or 5-year-old after she got them back. As she was doing it, and she said, this is the news conference I was at where the judge, I believe, was, because this changed a lot of how we did things then. So I think it maybe have even been Judge Mikvah. So he may have been, he was investigating whatever on a panel to see how we could change how the state takes children away and gives them back. Anyway, I was at a news conference. He was there describing it. I don't know why they were going into detail about it. And just describing how she, right as she was doing it, said, he said to her, "Mommy, I love you." I lost it.
Oh,
yikes.
I think there may have been another one, too, I told you about, Violetta, and I can't think of what that one was.
Well, just when something really huge, like 9/11.
Oh, 9/11 was really, really, yeah. I was here. I came in on my day off, and I brought my 4-year-old with me. That was really, only because it was so consuming,
right.
Overwhelming. But then when you're doing it, like I never left my spot. Yeah. I was nonstop, to the point where I remember calling United and a girl just bawling on the phone, telling me that they couldn't find the plane before we even knew.
Right.
Wow. So we were so in the midst of it as it was happening. But then when we had to get up like every few hours, I would get up and walk around, and it was just surreal. Surreal.
Yeah, yeah. I remember 9/11. I told Jeff the story. He's probably heard about 80 times now.
Probably.
When I was in the Marine Corps, I was just getting ready to get out. My end of active duty service was November 17, 2001. So the night before, I had NCO duties. I was a sergeant at the time, and you know we had to watch over the barracks. We called it the duty hut. So I'm down there overnight. We switch officers like 6 in the morning. So I go back to my room. I'm like, you know what? I want to go to San Diego. I want to go shop. You know, I'm not sleepy. Let me just go ahead and go shop. So I hop in the shower. I get dressed. And I'm hearing a bunch of commotion outside, but that's what you normally hear, you know, on a military base. You hear a lot of stuff going on. So get my clothes on. Something told me to call my mom. This is, you know, I didn't have a cell phone back then. You know, using the old school pay phone, so I call my mom. So when I call my mom, she's crying on the phone. I'm like, "You okay?" I'm thinking, you know, maybe my pops passed away or something. So I'm like, "You okay?" She go, "You haven't been watching the news?" I'm like, "No." And she was like, you know, a plane had ran into, you know, the World Trade. And I'm like, get out of here. And so I immediately looked to my right because I was right by the duty hut. And they had like a big screen, one of those projection TVs. And I see the second plane just hit. And I'm like, well, I got to go. And so they immediately shut down the entire base on Pendleton. So if you, there was no getting on, there was no getting off. If you were an NCO, like E3 and above, you were fully armed. So I had to walk around rifle, full gear, all this stuff.
Why? Because what was the feeling?
Nobody knew what was going to happen next. They didn't know if.
But what did they think was happening?
Well, at that point, nobody knew. It was just. We just saw that.
You had to prepare for
the worst. Yeah, we were preparing for the worst. And what was so crazy about it, we had about six new Marines that just checked in that morning, and they freaked out. You know, and I'm like, and they're like, oh, we're about to go to war. And they're freaking out, like, crying. I'm like, look, shut up. I'm like, get yourself together, get geared up, and we'll figure out what we're going to do at that point.
But, I mean, because this is a military base, did you think it was, were you guys thinking you were under attack?
The country was
under attack?
That was our first thought, you know, because at one point they wouldn't even let us park near the barracks after that. It was like you could not, the barracks was right here. I know it was radio, but barracks right here, parking lot's right there. You had to park like two sections mm-hmm. away from that. And they did that for about 2-3 months. You know, but it was crazy. And at that point, I knew I wasn't getting out on time. But surprisingly, they let me check out that November. But what was crazy was like maybe a few months after that, that's when I got called back. I'm like, I could have just stayed. You know,
yeah, right. Exactly.
But yeah.
They wanted to give you that little taste and then reel you back in.
Yeah, that was probably the most craziest experience I ever had in the Marine Corps. And I've been to a lot of places before that and saw some things, but that was just crazy.
And Brian, so you were, I mean, I know some people that we as civilians, even in the news, we didn't know what was going on, but the Pentagon had an idea of what was going on well before, so I'm sure they put all military on high alert because they were, I mean, there was a book, it was Cheney talking about how he gave the order to shoot down that last plane because it was missing, but they knew where it was. But they scrambled the two nearest jets, and they weren't armed, so they couldn't shoot it down. They were instructed to fly into it and take it out of the sky. But they knew. I mean, they knew that there was something else going on ahead of us. So Brian would have been – they would have been on high alert as soon as that word came
But when
came
you say
down.
They knew, I think nobody knew.
They knew it was an attack.
They knew it was an attack, but they didn't – no one understood.
The magnitude of it.
Because it had never happened before.
Right,
it was
but
my brain seeing when that second plane hit, I at first said to myself, oh my gosh, that plane was coming to help those people. Because I didn't want to believe, you know, I was trying to believe the best. That plane was coming to help because that first plane, until really hearing Peter Jennings say, all right, now this is plane two into a building. And then is when I called work and they didn't even say hello. They just said, get in.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, then it was, but I mean, it was hours and hours till we.
Right,
really
to people, but you know, they have protocols in the government. As soon as it's a thought of an attack,
right, and that's what I was asking.
Guys like Brian are armed and ready to go.
Yeah, like I said, it was so, like it felt like a dream.
Was it scary? Was it so scary?
I was more concerned, if anything, because I was ready. I'm not going to lie, I was ready to come home after my 4 years because I was trying to get active reserve here in Chicago at the time, and they wouldn't give it to me for whatever reason. I felt like I should have had it, but that's a totally different story. But when I didn't get it, I'm like, you know what? I'm done with the Corps. You know, I love you guys, but I got to go. I can't keep going overseas, and I'm tired of eating sand. I'm tired of it.
Right.
So I'm like,
timing's everything.
Right.
Huh?
It's like, I'm ready to come home. So when that happened, I'm like, I'm never going to leave this place now. Because the Marine Corps, what they don't tell you is that you sign up for 4, but they really have you for 8. So they got you for pretty much a decade. And whatever happens within that time, you're obligated to do it. So
how much longer were you there after 9/11?
Like I said, I came home in November. That next year around, I want to say around December, that's when I got called back, which was crazy. It was because when I'll never forget, I was going to Kennedy King at the time, and ironing clothes, the phone rings, and it came up as U.S. government on the caller ID, and I'm like,
Well, Ryan, everyone knows you don't answer those calls.
Well, I didn't know. It was like I saw it and I answered, and it was like, oh, Sergeant Altimer, we're calling to see if you're coming to check in Lejeune on, it was like, it said tomorrow, so that would have been like a Wednesday. And I'm like, no. And it was like, well, you must have didn't get the mail, Graham. You got reactivated. And I'm like, what?
It's
like,
Brian's not home right now.
You yeah. reached Brian's answering machine.
Oh, Brian Alheimer, yeah.
Please leave a message after the beep.
They're like, it was like, yeah, Devil Dog, you got reactivated. It was like, tell you what, we'll resend the mail, Graham. When you get it, you'll have 2 weeks from the day that you get it to check out. If you have a job, let them know. Show them your orders. If you're in school, show them your orders. There'll be no penalties. You won't have to owe the school anything. So I spent when that mailgram came, I'm not going to lie, I signed the mailgram, and for 2 weeks straight I drank. I mean, heavily, because I'm like, I'm going to die. I'm serious. That was my first thought process.
Were you mad that they reactivated?
I wasn't mad. I was just like, I'm going to die. So if I'm going to die, I'm going to do whatever I can. I'm going to live it up for these 2 weeks before I go. So 2 weeks, they fly you out to Lejeune. They were flying people from all over the country, at least from the East Coast. If you're East Coast, they were flying you to Lejeune. Anything west, they were flying you to Pendleton. So there were people that I knew that been out. They got out way before me, and I'm running into them like, yeah, you got called back too? Like, yeah, we got called back too. This is some bull.
I take it from what you're saying that you wouldn't, if you hadn't been called back, would you have? Because, a lot of people signed up or did go back on their own because, the American spirit was pretty strong.
They wouldn't let me.
And
you wanted to sign up?
I tried to enlist, but I had asthma, so they wouldn't take me.
Well, yeah,
and your asthma, Jeff.
I know.
Well, yeah, I always say this about people that sign up. I'm never going to question somebody's patriotism because everybody has their reasons why they get it.
Oh, well, I know, because then my question to you is, you did your 4 years, so.
Right, I did mine, and
right,
I figured
no,
I was
and you
done.
Were looking to but go I, home, but.
But I also knew my obligations, too, so I wasn't going to act like I didn't know. It's kind of like, if they always, we call it USMC, you signed the mother contract. That's what we used to call it. But,
and you were a sergeant. I would think that they really needed you.
Yeah. It was one of those things where I didn't want to do it, but I knew my obligations. So you just got to do it, and hope for the best. So
finally,
coffee. Please.
I took a hike. So, it was one of those things where I just knew what I had to do.
And so how long did you were you in that time?
I was there for about 6 months. And when George W. Announced, mission accomplished, I'll never forget. We're in Kuwait, and I'm sitting in there like, listen up. You're like, who wants to go home? Put your hand there. I'm like. I knew I was one of the first ones. I'm not ready to go. And the money, I'm not going to lie, the money was awesome. But,
did they pay you more during that time?
Well, yeah, you don't pay taxes. You get danger pay. You get all that stuff.
Pay, right. Yeah.
NCO, if you're an NCO, you get NCO pay. SEPs pay if you got kids. So you get paid a nice amount of money when you're over there. The trade-off is that you may get shot or get blown up.
You were going to die.
Right.
You were convinced. So.
Right. And so I was ready to come home. So, came home about a month after that, got back into school, just started doing radio like really hard, and ended up at WLS and never looked back and worked with Ro and Jeff and other producers. And Jeff.
What now?
He's one of the best producers I ever worked with.
Jeff who?
Jeff Carlin.
Oh, Jeff Carlin.
This guy right here. I call him the walking encyclopedia because the dude knows, like, you can talk about something and he'll instantly know about it. And I'm like, how would you know that? But he does, and it's crazy.
Oh, come on now.
Jeff, when does a girl become a woman?
What? I don't even know that answer.
But you don't know everything like Jeff.
When she gets baptized, right?
That's when she can enter.
At 16, right.
Exactly. Actually, speaking of the 9/11 thing, though, Violetta, what was your experience on it? Because I was always interested in someone younger than myself.
I don't know if you guys are ready to hear where I was on 9/11.
I know. Now I really want to know.
Partying.
Yeah. I was actually in fourth grade.
Mm.
So I was really young. My school was Catholic. I know some schools, you know, looking back, they actually canceled school that day because it happened so early.
Right, it did happen before school started.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. So we were already at school, though. They didn't interrupt our natural school day at all. And then at the end of the day, we always put our chairs up and we did a prayer at the end of the day. And this time the teacher led the prayer instead of the students. And she said, we're praying for New York today and a couple planes that have crashed, a couple in a building and then, you know, everything. And we were like, what? And as a fourth grader, we're like, oh, planes crash all the time, right? It doesn't even register. It seemed like a car accident. And then when we got home and started seeing all the footage, that's when it really became real. And, oh, as soon as we got out of school, actually, everyone in the parking lots were crying. And, you know, the parents were talking to teachers. And it was very strange because none of us kids knew what was actually going on until we got home. And then our parents talked to us. But
how'd they explain it to you? I mean, that's...
Well, my parents didn't really explain it to me, but I actually had went to a friend's house after that, my best friend's house. So we watched, you know, the footage all day. And I think as a kid, I don't know if I was as respectful as it all's happening. I don't think I really understood what was happening.
My kids, my boys who were much younger, they were cheering at the TV.
Because to watch the building crash.
But yeah, I had to step startling. Back because to them... It wasn't real.
It was like mm-hmm.
They were like, whoa! And
right. I know.
You know, oh my gosh. It was like a slap in the face. But they were four and five. And they knew nothing.
Right.
Thank God. Because now knowing what they saw is so different. So I can understand completely how you felt.
Right. So it was something along those lines. And then also, you know, our parents were telling us and the adults were telling us, like, if you don't have anything nice to say about this, or if you know, this is not funny, this is not cool, this is a lot of people were hurt. And we didn't know, you know, what connection. It seemed like then a week later, almost everyone had some sort of connection or something. You know, you knew someone at school or parents.
Someone knew someone who was there.
Right, exactly.
Or, yeah.
So then it became really real. I mean, I think as I got older, seeing the documentaries and the footage and, you know, I was obsessed with all of that stuff growing up.
Did you feel the Americanism?
Yes, I think definitely.
Because that was, if there was anything good about that, it was what
flag on every house.
Right, what we as Americans did.
Right, and seeing everyone jump into action. I mean, even hearing the plane that crashed into the field and how they took over. And I think it's hard not to get emotional about hearing something like that. And seeing the way that government reacted, news stations, I mean, I was obsessed with going back and seeing how people first reported on it because you didn't know. I mean, and they had a live shot of it, and as they're watching the live shot of the first plane, the second plane hits, and everyone's like, another plane just hit. You know, we'll come back with more on this because no one knew what was going on. And right. I think the mystery there was slightly intriguing. I think everyone was glued to their TVs for a long time, but the magnitude of it I think was lost on children, but maybe that was a good thing.
That was a good thing because the magnitude was so overwhelming.
Right. I think if kids were, I don't think we were that scared. I don't know. It was surreal, I guess, even as a kid, not understanding what was going on. But if kids were scared, that would have been pretty sad. If it was like mayhem and
right.
chaos.
It was all about, because I had to go pick my kids up after I'd worked. And it was all about, you know,
trying to
keep it normal. And yeah.
Right.
But you know what? The one thing I just talked about this the other day that I always go back to was how deafening the silence was of no planes.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? It was so weird.
And see, I can relate to that because
you were hearing nonstop. Hearing all kinds of stuff. Right. Thank goodness. You were hearing the planes fly. Right. Those planes we wanted to see.
Well, also, Tom Skilling made a comment the other day. I think they did some sort of the heat.
The contrails is what they are. It was a scientist seized on it because it allowed them to test the atmospheric temperature
without the airplanes.
Without planes, because there's this theory that the planes, when they rip through the wings, whip through the atmosphere,
they heat it,
and so they leave these little ribbons of heat throughout the atmosphere, and it raises that atmosphere. So it was a very interesting study that they got, a week it was.
Well, I think Tom Skilling told that story.
But I knew that story because it was one of those really weird. Yeah,
I think it was long. Much it was like a month. It was a lot longer than a week.
I mean, the fact that you would have never been able to test something like that. I mean, they took a pretty bad situation.
The Real Con Show with Anna DeVantis. We've been here for over a year. How do you like working with Ro?
It
is just exhausting.
Really?
I love working with Ro.
Yeah.
He's very easy to work with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because I bully him a little bit and he responds
he can take
to
it.
That. Yeah, he totally responds to that. So, yeah. It's been fun. It's been very fun.
Yeah.
This is, this show is, we're such a team. Not that we've always been a team on all of our shows, but this one, I don't know, it's maybe because it's all new for me especially. So I was here, but you guys are all kind of new.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a different experience. And I think we all get along. We're very friendly.
Yeah.
Other times I've worked on shows, we may not have seen each other after hours.
Well, it's a perfect opportunity since we get out at 7.
Maybe that's it because I need rehab.
Like the morning show. What, are they going to go out at noon?
Because of you guys.
We used to go out at noon.
You're right. The morning show, they go.
3:30.
We used to do a morning show. We used to go out in the morning.
Yeah, the morning show. I've never worked in the morning show. I did
open Seventh on Heaven.
Yeah.
I did the morning show for about 4 months and hated every second of it.
Yeah.
Because you don't know. It's like you lose track of time.
It's unnatural
to work that shift.
Some people don't ever get acclimated to it.
I don't think any. You can't.
I did it for a while. I did work mornings for a while. And at first it was awful, but you got used to it. I mean, it was cool to have the midday to go out and do run errands because there's no one at the store, and so you go out and do whatever you wanted. You'd take a little cat nap, and then
Kevin said it was terrible.
The worst part is though you had. I had to go to bed early. I mean, you couldn't stay up past 7, 8 o'clock.
Well, in the winter, especially, it gets dark so soon.
Right. And, that was the roughest part.
Trying to go to bed at 7 and getting up.
You miss everything. You couldn't watch any sports.
Right. I did overnights for a while, and it's like that, too. You just never get used to it.
Yeah, Sundays were the worst. They were the worst.
How do you guys like being here at WGN, the Ro Con Show?
Oh, I love it compared to the other places.
Is this the best radio station you've ever worked at?
Yeah.
yes.
Yeah.
All right, we're done.
That's
so
all
we're
wanted.
Out of time. That's to be all, continued.
This was all run up to that.
Yeah. I don't know. I like working here. Compared to the other place. It's more of a team effort. It's not about me. It's all about everybody working together to achieve that goal. So
support is there,
right?
From sales on down. I mean, from management on down to through sales and everybody. It's good to be here.
We're a family. We've been saying it for I don't know.
It's good to be alive right about now.
There you go.
Just saw Andy Grammer. He was awesome.
Right, and to work with a company that wants to help you grow. That means a lot to me.
That's what's nice.
Yeah, some places they see you in this position, and they're going to keep you there no matter how much you want to grow personally or professionally.
Right. And don't you feel like we're just starting too? I feel like there's so much more for us to do on the show.
I'm
expanding
it for you to show you. Yeah, I feel like we haven't even hit our stride yet. Oh, here's Kevin again. Speaking of the Ro Con Show.
Kevin.
Hey.
What's up?
Did you just wake up? It wouldn't be the same without him.
I'm exhausted from getting all you guys coffee at Starbucks.
Someone's got to do it, Kev.
How's everybody's coffee?
It's delicious. Kev, you don't need really any headphones.
You can hear us.
You're welcome. So what are you guys talking about?
Nothing.
You? I wasn't paying attention. Sorry.
You were not.
Wow, what else is new?
Judy was playing me like a fiddle.
I know, right? And I wasn't even finished, Chad. You're going to love it.
Oh, he's been listening to this?
Oh, yeah, they've been sitting there the whole time.
He's taking notes for all of you.
Well, we were just talking about working morning shows.
Oh,
and how much you hated it.
Hours. I didn't hate it. I loved it. It's just the hours absolutely suck the life out of you.
How do you like your new hours?
Well, I like the hours. The people I'm with is a whole different story.
You know, we've been saying nothing but nice stuff
I know,
this whole time.
Take it all back.
No, I love the morning show. It was different. In the summer, it wasn't as bad, to be honest. It could be harder to fall asleep at night because the sun sets later, obviously. So in the winter at 5 o'clock when it's dark outside, there we go. Yeah, there we go. Hot mic. In the winter, it was easier to fall asleep at night, but in the summer, it was great because for a golf junkie like myself, you were done by noon on the golf course by 12:30.
Yeah.
But then when you got home at 5 o'clock, you were absolutely exhausted, wiped out, and ready to go to bed. So
drooling all over yourself.
Drooling all over
and
yourself.
Now,
but
course,
that's still happening.
Well, yeah.
Kev, you could get up like most golfers and golf in the morning before your shift.
I do.
Oh, that's
sometimes.
What you do.
Yeah, I get a quick nine.
Before your shift at 2:30.
I hear Kevin say a lot of times, I slept in. So
I do.
It's sleeping in or golfing. Oh,
I'm not saying every day.
God, you poor boy.
I know. It's tough life. Tough life I have right now. But yeah, morning shows will they'll wear you down, but they're fun. The morning show, what I love was the pace. I mean, you blink and the show is over because you're consuming all the news and then spitting it back out for the listener. So you're like taking it all in at this rapid pace, and it's you get everything from the overnights that you may have missed or news that happened late.
It's more stressful though, I feel, from a producing standpoint.
Oh, I only produce for mornings for a long extended period of time, but it's definitely stressful because 7:30 rolls around and your schedule looks great. Like, man, this looks good right here. And next thing you know, something horrible happens overseas and there's breaking news. And it's like, okay, now we have to scrap a bunch of things. We had already busted our ass, like booking some guests. We have a great lineup and we have to scrap people because.
Or someone didn't wake up.
Or somebody. Oh, yeah. People not answering the phone in the mornings. Don't make hosts
happy. They're brushing
happy.
Their
I'll just
teeth.
Say
they
that.
Sound like they're still sleeping in bed.
Yeah, I don't think we ever had a case where somebody on the show was like super, super late, like completely missed a shift or anything like that. I had a very weird method of setting.
You mean besides Cochran?
Oh, he didn't start
Judy.
A half hour after the show?
I was waiting for Judy to fire away there.
How hard is it to get people to come into the studio in the morning?
It's not as hard as you think, because I think people like really feel. They like that. They feel like honored.
It's a morning show on WGN.
Yeah,
they better come in. But
it's different, I think, probably here for us. We're lucky to be at GN. So I think people here. I mean, you got to be realistic with it, though, and understand like who you're asking, understanding what their schedule is. You know, some people just absolutely love the being asked. So they would come in as early as you wanted. Some people. You got to respect their schedules, whether it was a certain politician or
coming in at 4 or 5 in the morning because they're going to be dried out.
Yeah, so you kind of understand that. You feel it out there, but not as hard as you think, to be honest. Most people, if you ask them,
do you think the Carnarvon wagon would work
in the morning show?
Yeah,
with
tea
and coffee.
There were some times in the 8 or 9 o'clock hour where something similar to the Carnarvon wagon would roll out. But back when I was producing, back in my producing days, we used to have, you guys may remember this, a lot of food. And at times, restaurants.
We miss you being in the mornings for that one reason. And we're wondering why you can't just continue that for the afternoons. Or is that Jeff's job?
I don't want to step on any toes. That's it.
Yeah. Well, when
we
it comes
have
to
nearly
food,
enough
it
food.
Doesn't matter. Just step away.
Yeah, but eating deep dish pizza at 7 a.m., I'm no doctor, but I wouldn't recommend that for a healthy
Or like you guys had like lobster roll and all that stuff.
Yeah, and you know, you look a lot healthier now.
Yeah, I feel healthier, but a lot of it's the sleep and, you know, not eating fried chicken at 7:30.
Right, not eating all that food, even though we do miss it. But we do have the Carnarvon wagon.
Yeah, that's one thing
that's
about radio.
That took time to get used to.
Just radio in general, is so much food. No matter what radio station you go to, it's always a bunch of food. And if you don't have that self-control, and I've known people that work in radio stations, they just blew up, you know. And it's like, and then they don't work in radio anymore. You see them maybe 6 months later, and they're back.
And they're all svelte again. That's hilarious. Yeah. Remember that, Violetta? Could happen.
Yeah.
Well, it was.
She's not being.
It was so easy to get people to bring food. You know, it's like, we're going to plug the hell out of your restaurant. Like, how difficult is it to bring food for 7-8 people? The hardest part was just getting to bring it in the mornings and stuff. But some people were like, totally go out of the way to bring us food. I would be talking to an owner and they'd be like, no, I'll wake my chef up early. He's going in early. He's cooking you guys up a fresh meal. I'll bring it in personally, drop it off at the counter. So I was like, all right, sweet. Not going to say no to that.
Yeah. You should write a book. Because it's WGN. Yeah.
Write a book on how to get free food if you work in radio.
Right. And Taste of Chicago.
No, your story.
Field day with that.
I haven't been to Taste of Chicago in a while because they all come to the radio station and serve it. You tasted everything at the radio station. You don't have
people,
to go to
taste. When people are like, hey, have you been to this new restaurant in the city or this one? I'm like, I would try to explain. I'm like, I've eaten their food because every new restaurant would bring us food. I'm like, I've eaten their food. I've never actually been there. So don't ask me about the atmosphere or anything like that. But I tasted the food. It was good.
Yeah.
So that's getting free food 101 in radio. Anything else? Anything else, Judy?
Well, what else have we not talked about? We've just
How's the coffee again? Here. Did I ask you guys about
Coffee's
that?
Coffee's great. It is really good.
Can we say thank you?
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, no problem, guys. No problem.
You know what?
Not fishing.
It's humid out there. I broke a sweat walking across the street.
Oh, let's talk about the weather. Really?
I hear it's going to rain on Thursday.
I'm going to the Cubs
classic
game.
Dad
better
joke.
Not rain.
Tonight you're going?
Thursday. Okay. Oh. How about the Cubs, huh?
Oh, God.
What?
Anyone watch
they
the game last
the
night?
They went into the 13 innings, right?
Mm-hmm. Violetta, do the sports report here. I'll do the traffic.
Okay, I know. I'm taking Kevin's material.
You know, they're on a roll. They're doing good. They won. So that's.
How about that starting rotation?
All about the rotation.
What about this date last year?
What's that?
How about this date last year? Wasn't that Arrieta's no-hitter last year in the state?
Oh,
in
okay, Cincinnati?
Only Jeff would know
a
that.
A no-hitter means...
No one
got the ball.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
No, you know what?
You won a $25 gift card at Lumonati.
That is not what it means. You can get a hit with a no-hitter.
No base.
No, you can't.
No ball on
base. You're taking on base.
No, that's a perfect game.
That's a perfect game.
A perfect game is nobody's on base.
No,
but
a no-hitter is you can get a hit, but they catch it.
No, if there's an error or something like that, or if they're walked, or if they're hit by a pitch.
You can get on base with
they can
an,
get on
and
base.
Have a no-hitter, but you can't get
oh, yeah, because you can get four outs no. and get
okay,
on first.
Okay, but explain what is
right?
what is a hit?
Four balls?
What
four
is a
balls.
Hit?
Yes.
A hit is if you knock the ball into play and it's
if you,
you
hit
get
it
the
where
base.
They ate. If yeah. you hit the ball and they don't catch it and throw you out at first or second or third or home.
Can you bunt
well,
it?
Actually, if they threw you out at okay, so if you... if
yeah, because that always confuses me.
If you got thrown out at second, it would still be considered a single, so...
Right.
Like that would
because
be
no one
no-hitter.
Hit the ball with the bat, Judy.
If you put the ball in play and they throw you out,
it's
out.
Not that hard to understand, Judy. I'll tell you about it
so,
later.
Right, but so a no-hitter is, I always thought a no-hitter was no one scored. No one
they
even
can
got
score.
On base.
There's people, there's pitchers that have recorded no-hitters and gotten losses and given up runs because yeah. you can walk, the base is loaded. You can walk five batters in a row and give up two runs.
I think
you could throw a wild.
No
could
throw,
then you could
those.
Throw a wild pitch. I think it was AJ Burnett, right?
Yeah.
And then again, a perfect game.
Perfect game is 27 batters up, 27 batters yeah. down.
No one on base.
No one on base.
And
no
who
walks.
Is? How many of those have there been?
Not a whole lot. I don't know the number. A lot less than no hitters.
All right.
I'll Google it.
So
for
So do
you
only have
you know.
27 players on a team?
No, you only have 27 outs in a game. Per
27
side.
Outs, three outs per inning, nine innings.
And you know what? So on that note, on life. The note of the Cubs that are just
they're pretty
gonna make
good.
Our city proud, they're mm-hmm. yeah, they're pretty good. Says to the Sox fan. All right, well that's a wrap. And this
I
has
be
been
clear. This is the third time this month we've explained hitting safely in a ball game.
You know what? I still don't get it.
Well, I think we should
but
do it at least
it.
Once a month to keep it fresh
right.
in your
yeah,
head,
exactly.
so you know.
Because you know what? There are other people who think that they're like, what
you know what,
no
Kevin?
Hitter?
What's on the flip mean? Is that a place?
Okay, I didn't know that because I was giving her sports terminology and she was giving me traffic and I would hear rubbernecking and the flip. I didn't know what any of it meant.
He's like, the flip's like the junction, right? I'm like,
what? Oh, I didn't say that. I'm just like, what's the flip? What is
it means
that?
On the reverse trip.
Yeah,
just
now
opposite.
I get it.
Flip it.
Just like Judy being reminded of a no-hitter three times a month. I have to
yeah,
be reminded
I,
of the
I'm
traffic
gonna ask you
terminology.
Again. Yeah, I still don't remember.
Really classic care. Rubbernecking.
Rubberneck.
A no-hitter in my book is... 27 outs with no one ever with swinging and never
that's
touching
the
ball.
That's a perfect game.
Yes, I just learned yeah. that.
It's a perfecto.
We have a name for this. I decided we're calling this Behind His Back.
Oh, I like it.
So, on WGN called Behind His Back.
That's great.
All right.
That's hilarious.
I like that.
No problem.
All right. Did you get all your shots and
yeah. all your ducks in a row?
Yeah, we got a nice podcast out of it.
Did we pass?
Everyone, all the lines worked and everything worked like a breeze?
Yeah. Good.